What's up, world? Welcome to the Positive Truth, uplifting and positive news for a more progressive society. Tim, do you want to tell everyone about what we have going on today?
We got an awesome interview with Ms. Barbara Chisco right here. Before we get started, make sure you guys are following us on all our social media platforms, Facebook at The Positive Truth, Twitter at TPT underscore podcast. Everywhere else is pretty much The Positive Truth, Instagram, YouTube, all that good stuff, iTunes as well. Now, this interview with Barbara Chisco, the reason we're bringing her here is because we like to bring people on the show that are doing positive things in the community. And a lot of people may not know who she is, but hopefully after this you find out who she is and what she's doing. You guys can see all the greatness that she's doing for our community. So, that being said, we're going to go ahead and get started. Is that cool with you?
It's a pleasure to be here. Of course it is.
Awesome. So, can you tell us who you are and what you do?
My name is Barbara Chisco, and I'm the Executive Director of Birth Choice of Oklahoma.
Awesome, awesome. Now, what is Birth Choice?
Birth Choice is an organization that helps pregnant women. We are there to offer her practical solutions so she's able to carry her child to term.
Sounds awesome.
It is. We've been doing it for 45 years, and I've been with the organization for 45 years. We're a nonprofit 501c3. We're registered with the Charities and Solicitation Board for the state of Oklahoma, and we're also with Dun & Bradstreet.
Well, have you been with them all 45 years?
Yes, I have. I was on the groundwork when we started the organization.
That's amazing. How did you get started doing this?
Well, I was a young mother. And my life was perfect. I had two little girls and a great husband, and I didn't really want to get involved with anything. And yet, everywhere I turned and everywhere I listened, I kept hearing the word abortion. And though I knew I would never have one myself, I just didn't realize the outcome that would happen once abortion became legal. At the time I heard about it, and at the time we started Birth Choice, abortion wasn't legal. We started in the fall of 1972. So, you know, with that being said, like I said, everywhere I turn, you'd hear the word. And so then finally one day, a friend of mine brought me this book, and it was called The Handbook on Abortion. And when I read it and understood what was happening in our society and what was coming down the pike, I knew I had to do something. I didn't want to get involved in marching or politics or changing the laws or anything like that. I wanted to help the woman. I felt that if I could just talk to one woman, if I could just explain to her that she wasn't alone, that she needn't be frightened, that there was support for her, that maybe I could help her with her pregnancy. And in the book, The Handbook on Abortion, there was one chapter devoted totally to what was called pregnancy care centers. And so I said, I can do that. And with that, I called some other people that had been speaking, and I offered to volunteer, and I was going to work 2 hours a day, 2 hours a week, and, you know, answer phones. And, you know, here I am 45 years later, and we have four offices and a group home for pregnant women.
So how? That's crazy.
Yes, it is.
That's
amazing.
That's amazing because you knew what you wanted to do, your own limitations,
yes,
and how you could fully apply yourself.
Yes.
How many hours do you work now?
Probably a full 40.
You went from 2 hours of volunteer work to a full 40?
Yes. We started out at Lakeside United Methodist Church, and we had two folding chairs and a telephone. And the purpose was, if we could let women know that they could call someone that would help them with whatever problem they had as far as pregnancy was concerned, then maybe, you know, we could answer those problems. Well, I'll never forget my first phone call. I was sitting there, and the phone rang, and there was dead silence, and they hung up. I thought, oh, a crank call. And then I waited a few more minutes, and, you know, waiting for the phone to ring, and again it rang, and, you know, I got all excited. I'm going to help somebody. And again, dead silence, and they hung up. And I thought, you know, somebody really is desperate here. And so when the phone, and this happened three or four times more, and finally the last time, I said, when the phone rings this time, and I just asked God to help me say the right words. So I picked up the phone and I said, listen, I'm just as scared as you are. Won't you please talk to me? And then I began to hear the sobs and the crying. And it was from a 17-year-old girl. She was a senior in high school. She was pregnant. No one knew she was pregnant. She had a full college scholarship, and She had already decided that she would place her baby for adoption, but she didn't know where to go or what to do. And she had seen our ad in the personal column of the newspaper, and the ad said, pregnant need help, call. And so she told me that, and, you know, again, you know, we really didn't know what we were doing. We just had this desire to help our mom. So I first said, well, we got to know that you're pregnant. You know, got to do a pregnancy test. And I remember meeting her at a fast food restaurant and picking up, you know, her specimen and taking it to the lab. And of course, you know, when I saw her, I knew she was pregnant. It was, couldn't deny that. But that gave me time to try to figure out what we were going to do. And so I took her to I called an adoption agency, and they told me that they could help. And so, you know, back then, believe it or not, there was no caller ID, there was no social media, there was no Facebook, no internet, none of this stuff. So if the way we communicated was through mail, you know, the U.S. Postal Service. So the director of this adoption agency would have her write letters to her family. And she told her family that she was going to go for a summer job, and she'd be gone all summer. And so during that time, she gave birth. And I was with her, and then I was with her when she made her adoption plan and when the adoptive parents picked up the baby. And so then she went home, and no one ever knew. You know, she was able to send those letters. You know, they send them out of town and then mail them to her parents. And so her parents kept in touch with her. She came back, went to college, and everything turned out okay for her.
It's an awesome story.
Mm-hmm.
And that was your first time?
That was my first time. Again, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, my goal was, you know, to get someone and just talk to them, you know, and let them understand, you know, reasons why she shouldn't have an abortion. I didn't know I was going to get into all these other issues. We see between 300 and 400 women a month. And so we run, you know, probably right at 150 pregnancy tests. And so we're able to, you know, talk to all kinds of women and, you know, all ages. My youngest girl was age 10, you know, when she came to see me. And she had been the product of incest. And I've had, you know, a lot of 12, 13-year-old girls. You know, and it's just talking to them and loving them and letting them know that someone cares about them. You know, there's no problem so great that it warrants the destruction of innocent life. You know, and this is what I've tried to convey, you know, to my girls. And, you know, and then I've had a lot of women that have had abortions that are suffering from post-abortion syndrome, you know, and to help them, because I know that they're going to want to get pregnant again and repeat that, you know, repeat that baby, make, you know, up for that baby that they lost. And so, you know, I'm trying to be there for those girls too. You know, we're a volunteer-driven organization, and so I have a lot of great volunteers that can empathize with our mothers and, you know, can help them. You know, when we started out, you know, the main services that we offer were the pregnancy testing and clothing, you know, both baby and maternity clothing. Well, today we have, you know, the pregnancy testing. We're able to do a limited ultrasound so that they're able to see their baby. We have a prenatal clinic where we have the doctors from St. Anthony's Hospital that come and do clinic for us, and we have our group home for pregnant women. So, you know, we just have a variety of other services that we offer. You know, what I've learned, I guess, over the years is that it doesn't matter how or why a woman gets pregnant. What's important is that she's carrying human life. What's important is that she's a person of worth and dignity because she is carrying that human life. And if we can convey that to our moms, then there's nothing that they can't do. You know, I had a 15-year-old girl one time that came in, and she was adamant that she get an abortion. And I talked and talked and talked to her and basically just let her know the dangers, but also about fetal development, which is what so many, you know, women don't know. You know, we exist because of ignorance. Birth choice is here because women and men don't know their bodies and what their bodies do. And so when I was able to tell her about where her baby was, and, you know, that the baby's heart had been beating at 18 days after conception, that at 42 days after conception, there was measurable brain waves, that at 6 weeks after conception, that all the organ systems are present and functioning. When she realizes this, then, you know, naturally she wants to have her baby. So when we tell her those things and she experiences those things through an ultrasound, you know, then she's able to choose life. Well, this is what I told this young girl. And her mother was adamant, you know, there was a lot of family drama, and so the mother took her to get the abortion. But I had told her, I said, should that happen? I said, again, grasping at straws here. I said, just tell the doctor that you don't want it, and that if you ever have a chance, you'll come back and sue him. Well, he didn't touch her. And the mother left her there, and then she called me, and I went and got her and brought her home and took care of her. And she gave birth, and she kept her baby, and she went ahead and finished on her own, you know, with no help, you know, other than our support. She went ahead and finished high school, went to college. She married, had the little girl and had a little boy, and she became the director of another nonprofit organization, and today she's a grandmother, and she's very, very successful, you know. But, you know, I don't know what would have happened if she had gone the other way. We don't know, you know.
It's a good thing she found you, guys.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, a good thing I found her, because she's brought a lot of joy into our lives, and she's become part of a member of our family, and I still keep up with her.
It's amazing. Whenever girls come through,
mm-hmm.
you stay in touch with them afterwards, and
if they want to, yes, we do. Yeah,
it's awesome.
You know, we leave it all up to her. You know, some girls don't want that relationship. Others do. Others need that relationship.
How many do you think do? Like, can you give us a percentage?
A percentage that we keep in touch with them? Maybe 30 to 40%. You know, kind of hard to judge, because, you know, those types of records I don't keep. Those types of statistics I don't keep. But yet, you know, I have I have so many volunteers. I have over 100 volunteers. And those volunteers keep in touch with their girls, you know, and then I'll hear through, oh, I got a note for such and such. Or I have one volunteer that they just gave the baby his second birthday, and they had a big party and, you know, did all those things. And, you know, he's had some health issues, and, you know, the volunteers have been supportive of, you know, the mother and the baby and, you know, the whole family.
So you talk about risk, pros and cons of abortion. Do you mm-hmm. want to just tell everyone about those?
Those risks on the pros and cons of abortion. Well, one is infertility. A girl can be infertile after she has an abortion. There can be the psychological dangers. It does bother them. They do suffer from post-traumatic abortion syndrome, very much like post-traumatic stress syndrome. One of the very first girls that I dealt with that was post-abortive, the pastor found her in the back of the church, and she was crying, and she had had an abortion because her boyfriend had told her that she had to have one, or, you know, he'd leave her. And if she would have the abortion, you know, they could stay together and they would eventually get married. Well, the minute she had the abortion, he kicked her out. And so she was devastated and went to church. You know, where else was she going to go? So we took her home and we helped her. We got her through counseling and, you know, tried to get her through that. But she was just so upset and had so many problems. You know, to me, and the way that, in my opinion, and the way that I can explain it is that abortion's like a time release capsule. You know, there's all kinds of things that can happen, you know, from sterility to psychological problems. You know, when a vacuum cleaner is turned on, you know, that kind of triggers that. A lot of our mothers become promiscuous. You know, all of these things can happen to her. And so blood clots, you know, there's the physical sterility. Anyway, it's that abortion is like a time release capsule. Sometimes it'll happen right away. Sometimes it doesn't happen for years later. I remember a mother talking to me and telling me about her abortion. And she says, oh, yes. She said, every night I go out and I look at the moon and I see my baby that I aborted waving behind the moon. And so, you know, they do suffer those things. And because it is such a dark thing, you know, a lot of mothers just suppress those things. And, you know, when a girl comes in and we're talking to her, you know, and if she's post-abortive, then we'll ask her, well, you know, I've never had an abortion. Tell me about yours so that I can, you know, try to understand. And it's just amazing to us how they pour out their hearts. I've talked to a lot of women that have been in the abortion industry. There's a lady out of Texas by the name of Carol Everett, and she came and spoke to us, and I've heard her speak at several conferences. And she talks about, you know, everything that has happened in the abortion industry and how it's all for money. You know, we're a nonprofit. We don't charge for any of our services. You know, where the abortion industry, you know, that's a money-making thing. And, you know, that's a billion-dollar industry the way it is today. And it's really affecting our society. And I don't think people realize that.
So did you have any pros for abortion, or are you just completely against it?
I'm completely against it. I've never yet to see a reason why abortion would be the right thing to do. Even in my cases of rape, you know, rape, incest, you know, those are tremendous problems for women to face. But by her having an abortion, it just compounds it. It just compounds it. One of my dear friends adopted a product of rape, a baby. Today he's just an unbelievable young man. You know, he's an attorney. He's very successful in everything that he does. And she tells me, she says, I would like to meet his father. And I go, why would you want to do that? And she says, because he needs to know how much good there was in him. Even though he did this horrible thing, you know, he needs to know that there is some good in him. And that's what we as a society want to do, is we want to find the good in people, you know, and I see no good, you know, in the issue of abortion. And I've never seen it. And trust me, for 45 years, I've been dealing with it. And so I know that there is no good that can come out of it.
I feel like we should just let you tell stories for an hour. And it would just be totally captivating.
Yeah, I have a lot of stories. A lot of stories.
Oh, we love stories.
Yeah, here. Yeah. Well, if you go back to when we started, you know, back in the day, you know, things were different, okay? And the way they were different is, and I truly believe because of the way things were then, is why we have abortion today, you know? It's been the after effect. Because when a girl got pregnant back then, she was immediately shipped off. She disappeared for 9 months. And what happened is that she was sent to a group home or a maternity home, is what they were called. And she had her baby and she had to place it for adoption. She couldn't come home with that baby. So, you know, that's the way it was then. Well, then, you know, as the 70s come along and the 80s, society kind of changed and they kind of accepted the fact that girls got pregnant and they weren't married and that they could keep their babies. And so in the beginning, you know, for those girls that were thinking about placing or having their babies but didn't want to place their babies for adoption, we had what we call mutual assist homes, where girls would go into a family type atmosphere and they, in exchange for light housekeeping, then they could live there free. And so, but then things started to change. We went into where women that were in the home had to go to work. You had to have a two-person income in order to survive, you know. And so I didn't have any place to put the girls, you know, and I brought home quite a few. So we started to look and try to get our group home. And we wanted a group home for girls that were, you know, were homeless. So we founded our Rose Home. And what we did is I had a gentleman that found the home for me. He was the husband of one of our volunteers. And he said, I found this great house and, you know, I think it would make a wonderful group home. And so we went, but we didn't have any money. You know, we're a nonprofit and, you know, there's no money. So we said, well, how are we going to buy it? And he was a businessman. He says, I'll go talk to the bank. So he went and talked to the bank, and believe it or not, he got the bank to agree to give us a 3-year balloon note. At the end of the 3 years, we could pay it off. But in that length of time, we would raise the money. So we found someone to run the home, and we start in, and we start raising money, but the plumbing went out, needed a new roof, and there went all the money. So the 3 years was over with. And we go, what are we going to do? Well, in the back of my mind, I thought, well, maybe they'll give us a loan, you know. And so I, you know, was kind of waiting on that when I got a phone call. Just out of the blue, this lady called me. She goes, I want to know what you do. And so I told her what we did. And, you know, we're a pregnancy center. She said, well, is there anything you need? And of course, I said, we always need things. And I said, just think of everything that you need in your home. We need it here. You know, we need paper towels, toilet paper, cleaning supplies, clerical items, you know, pens, pencils, those types of things. And she goes, do you need anything bigger? And at the time, we were having a lot of mothers at Rose Home that had children, and we didn't have a fence around the property. So I said, let's go. And I said, we need a fence around Rose Home. She says, well, tell me about Rose Home. So I told her about Rose Home. She says, and I told her that, you know, about the mortgage. And she says, well, I'm going to think about it. She says, give me a few days. And she hung up, and I thought, well, she's not going to call again. You know? You know how that goes. Everybody calls, and they're going to do all this and nothing. Well, she called me back. And, well, no, she didn't call me back. She came to see me, and she brought me a check for $50,000. And so, yeah. So that was how we were able to pay Rose Home. And then several years later, the house next to it, which was a mirror house of Rose Home, went up for sale, and they bought it for us and gave it to us. So that's how we have our group home. Our Rose Home holds six women with their children. You have to be 18 years of age or older. We're pretty strict, but at the same time, we're pretty lenient. You know, we're strict in that there's no drugs or alcohol. Men aren't allowed on the premises, and they have a curfew. But other than that, you know, and we take care of everything. Take care of all their expenses, all their food, and transportation, things along those lines. So, very first girl that comes to Rose Home. Oh, she was a beauty. And just had that effervescent personality that just, you know the type. You know, she just like every rights for the world, you know, and she was pregnant, and she had been brought to, she'd been sent to us by an adoption agency, and she's going to place her baby for adoption. Well, you know, we understood this and we accepted her, and, you know, we were just real eager to help her, you know, to teach her all the things that she needed to know. And she had no toes. And she told us that she had run over her toes with a lawnmower when she was mowing the lawn. And, you know, we thought, wow. Well, you know, when it's dark at night and there's no one to listen to you, or you feel that you're vulnerable, well, she began to tell us the real story. Her mother didn't want her, and her mother tried to kill her on two occasions. The first time, she put her in the oven and turned the gas on, and it didn't work. And the second time, she put her in boiling water, and that's how she lost her toes. Because of this, and then this girl was super smart, she knew that she would not be a good parent. That would, you know, would cause her. And she had been pregnant before, and like I told you about the atonement babies, she had had an abortion. So she had, you know, got pregnant again to atone for that one. The next one she had placed for adoption. And now here she was pregnant for the third time, and she couldn't go through the abortion, so she was going to place this baby for adoption. And we said, well, you know, we'll help you the best we can. Well, as she lived in the house and got comfortable with us, she came to us and she says, you know, I want to try to parent my baby, but you have to promise me one thing. And I thought, what? She says, if you see that I'm abusive, because that's what was done to me, and I know that that will happen, you know, that's the generational thing that happens, you know. Will you take the baby away from me, and will you, you know, make sure that it's placed for adoption and call the authorities? And we said, yes, we'll do that. But we said, you know, you can help yourself. You can go to parenting classes. You can, you know, yourself go to counseling, and let's get rid of these demons that you have. I said, let's see how we can do that. So we did. And she was one of the best little mothers I'd ever seen. So she gets a letter from the adoption agency. And it's a bill for about, I think it was
$20,000.
$20,000. And it was, you know, placed in group home. X amount of counseling. X amount of transportation. And the total. And she said, I can't pay that. I'm going to have to place my baby for adoption. Now, over the years, people would come to me and say, Barbara, if there's anything you need, just call and let me know. And I had remembered an attorney had said that to me. And so I called her up, and it was a lady. And I told her the situation. She says, you and Candy come see me. And I said, okay. So Candy and I and the baby went to go see her, and she looked at the paperwork and she goes, if they call you again, tell them I'm your attorney and for them to contact me. He says, you probably won't hear from them again. I'll take care of this. And so we go home. And so we're on our way home, and all of a sudden, I look over at her, and she's crying. Her tears are just streaming down her little face. And I said, what's the matter? She says, do you know something, Barbara? And I said, no, Candy, what? She says, you've taught me something. And I said, yeah, I have. I taught you how to cook and how to clean, and we taught you how to run a checkbook and how to be a good mother. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And I said, what did I teach you, Candy? You know, by this time I'm crying. And she looked at me and she says, you've taught me how to trust. Taught me how to trust. And so that's basically what we want to do with our moms, is just to help them, you know, to do these things, you know, to teach them to believe in themselves so that they don't choose abortion, so that they choose life, so that they know that there's a baby growing inside of them, you know. And not only do we deal with our moms, but we deal with our dads. You know, lots of times we'll have the dad come in to see the ultrasound, you know, because he doesn't believe her, you know, or he doesn't believe that. Like I said, you know, we exist because of ignorance. You know, we're here to educate and to help them. We have four offices in the metropolitan area. Awesome. We have one in Edmond, one in Bethany, one in Norman, and one Southside. And all four of them do ultrasounds. And our Southside office is the one that has the medical clinic, and then our group home. You know, so we're here to help any mother that needs our help, any woman, and if she just wants to come in and just talk to us. You know, same thing with the dads or parents. You know, we're there just to offer that sympathetic ear, that listening ear, you know, to help anyone that's pregnant or think that they are. And they can see us on our website.
Awesome.
We have a website.
So I was wondering, how many men volunteers do you have?
We have quite a few men volunteers. Mainly they come and help us do maintenance, or they're on our board of directors. To actually talk one-on-one with women, we don't have any male volunteers. Though we have had some male volunteers that have come in and talked to our young men.
Absolutely. Is there... Just explain to some people that would ask the obvious question of, why don't you let the men speak to the women?
The vulnerability that's there for both the women and the men. Sometimes it can be misconstrued, but a lot of times, you know, some of the women that come to us, and there's no way of us knowing until after we talk to them, you know, have been abused or have been taken advantage of. And so that would make them feel uncomfortable, so they wouldn't open up as much with a man as they would a woman.
Absolutely. So you've been doing this for 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
Building something for 45 years is so difficult, every aspect of it. And it seems like you do everything through your stories. It seems like you're superwoman. I'm impressed. Like, I don't know what you can't do. That's what I'm feeling right now. Like, how much have you changed, like, as a person? How much has this pushed you over 45 years? Just to give an examples.
It's changed me. I think it's changed me a lot. In the beginning, you know, I was so righteousness. There was a lot of righteousness in me. And now I think I've lost most of that. It may not appear that way, but I have. You know, I have a lot of empathy for the women that come to us and for the women that have been hurt. Especially through abortion. Used to get real angry in the beginning. And you go through those phases, you know, the denial, the anger, the resentment, you know, the acceptance, you know, you go through all those stages. And I guess I'm at acceptance now. I realize that I can't, you know, make people do what I want them to do, that they have to make their decisions. But what I can do is impart information, and hopefully they accept the information that I give them. I've had to learn to do everything only because there wasn't anyone else to do it. You know, we thought in the beginning that we could call on agencies or professionals to help us. And though we had a list, you know, when we'd call them, they weren't available. So we were the ones. So what we did is that we taught ourselves by going to conferences and learning, reading books and learning what we needed to learn. You know, first of all, anything on pregnancy, on fetal development, but then just on the human psychic, personality disorders, you know, any of those things. Now we've had to learn about drug and alcohol, and all of those areas, you know, how we can help women, because we do have a, you know, we do have a problem in this country, you know, with drugs and alcohol. And the other big problem that we're having now is the sex trafficking. So we had to learn those things so that we are aware of those when we have a woman that comes to us that may be facing these problems.
Experience is the best teacher.
It is, most definitely. You know, because that's where you make your mistakes and that's where you learn from.
Absolutely. What was your education before you started Birth Choice?
A little college, but basically I was a mother. You know, that wife and mother. And I had a little college and that was it. I grew up in the food business, you know, worked in restaurants. There wasn't anything I didn't do. I did, you know, restaurant work, maid service, went to college. My major was mathematics, you know, so just all, you know, little bookkeeping, little this, little clerical, you know, that's about it.
So you basically followed your heart.
Yes, yes. Well, I heard a sermon in church. And the sermon was, if you believe in something, then you have to live it. Well, I believe that abortion was wrong and that it wasn't going to solve anybody's problems. And so I had to live it. And so that's, you know, but I really only thought I was going to do it 2 hours a week.
45 years later, yeah, 40 hours a week.
40 hours a week. So now, you know, it's become, you know, not only my life works, but my family's life work. And, you know, my kids are always bringing somebody to me. Mom, they need this, they need that. Can you get me this? Can you get me that? You know, will you talk to this girl? Will you, you know, see what she, how can you help her? And so, you know.
I mean, I can't think of a better way to raise your children and make them more empathetic and love mm-hmm. others than what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And for the most part, yes, they have become very empathetic and, you know, they're there. They've been there for me and, you know, so has their father, you know, because you can't do this alone. You can't possibly do, you know, the work that is done, you know, done alone.
You can't do anything alone.
No, you can't. No. You have to, it has to be a community unit. It has to be, you know, everyone pitching in. And that's the way it is with Birth Choice, is we all have to be together for each other because, you know, it does drain you, you know, emotionally when you talk to someone that has, you know, a lot of drama in their lives. And so, you know, to get them to understand what that drama is about, and to direct them in a different direction, then, you know, that's just really important, you know, and to help them make a right decision, you know.
Absolutely.
There's a rap singer. Oh, I can't think of his name. He was Mariah Carey's husband.
Nick Cannon?
Yes, Nick Cannon.
Okay.
He has a neat song and it's called Can I Live? Because his mother went to abort him. And so he wrote a song about it. And so, you know, and I think one of the lyrics in there is, you know, just make sure it's the right decision. That's what made me think of it. So yeah, Nick Cannon. So, you know.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because, you know, a lot of us don't realize how close we were to not being here. You know, if you really stop and think about it, you know, because let's face it, there's never enough money. There's never enough time.
Truth.
You know, there's never enough resources, you know, but if you stop and think, well, is it important to have all that money? You know, is it important to have those material goods? You know, can't we find time? You know, what do you decide to do? You know, go this way or go that way. So you have to make those decisions. So back to your question, the things that I've had to learn, you know, I've had great teachers to teach me. You know, I learned, number one, that I didn't have to know everything because there's people in the community that do know it, and I just have to know what it is that I need to know. And they're the ones that come and help us out. We knew 15 years ago, that we needed a new building, that we needed new office space, we needed a new center. And so we began looking as to how we could build it. And I went to a conference and this man talked on development and raising money. And he gave us a formula that if you had this many people and they gave this a much amount, then you could ask them for this amount, they would give you this much. And I thought, I have enough money, we can raise money and build a new building. And so I came back and talked to our board and they said, go for it. So I began to look for a, the first thing I need to do is, you know, find out how much this building's gonna cost. So you need an architect to draw up the plans. So I started calling architects and they'd ask me questions. Well, how much money do you have? I said, I don't know, how much is it gonna cost? And they'd hang up on me.
Really?
Yes. Well, I don't think we can do that. No. You know, if you don't have any money now, you know. And I thought, well, what are they talking about? You know, why not? So finally, someone gave me the name of this company and I called them and the owner of the company answered. I thought, well, that's nice. And so I told him and he goes, oh, this sounds really, really interesting. Let me come visit you. I said, oh, sure, come on down. So he came down and he sat and he spent probably a good hour and a half with us. And at the end, he said, well, here's what I'm going to do for you. He said, I'm going to draw you plans. You know, I'm going to draw you a design and a floor plan. And you use that money to go raise your, you use those plans to go raise your money. And when you raise your money, then, and you build your building, if you raise it, you're going to owe me this much. If you don't raise it, you don't owe me anything. I thought, gee, that's fair.
Right.
Well, the next time I had to meet with him, he said, come to my office. I said, okay. So I go to his office and it's in this plush complex. He's got like 20 employees. He had no business answering the phone the time I called. None whatsoever. So I decided to take his plans and I went to visit two people that were my mentors. And so I went to the first mentor and he loved everything I did. Now, I wasn't asking him for money. I was just telling him what we were going to do. And I wanted their support and their blessing. And so first one said, yes, you build it. It looks great. You have my support. And then with the second gentleman that I wanted to go talk to, he had always said yes to me. I mean, I could call him with it. He was a physician. And I said, what I want from you is I know you know people that have money and I want you to give me their names so that I can go visit them and ask them for money for this building. He said, okay, let me think about it and then I'll get back to you. I said, fine. So I waited and he called me back. And I just knew, you know, he had a list of names to give me and he goes, Barbara, I don't want to do that for you. I fell to the floor because the man had never said no. And I said, okay. He says, I want to head your capital campaign committee. I want to be the chairman of it. And I want to raise the $1 million you need for your building. So I didn't have to do anything.
Wow.
Not really, but you know, he got a committee together. They raised the money and we were going to build where our office was. But because we own that property, we own two lots there. And they were building a grocery store on the third lot. And they came and they'd heard we were building, but they wanted me to flip the building because they wanted us to have a common parking lot. And I said, no. I was angry and upset and said some things I shouldn't have said. And that night it just happened. We had a board meeting and I told the board what had happened. And one of my board members said, well, we'll just find us another site. And that was even upsetting because we had been looking for 9 years. We'd been looking for a new site and had looked all up and down the street. And he says, well, I'll go find us something. So, well, he did. It just happened that the site that he looked at, we had looked at it before, but it had cost $240,000. Well, we didn't have $240,000. And but they had dropped down in price to $75,000.
Oh, wow.
So I had my other board member go to the man that was building the grocery store and sell our property to him. And I said, I don't want to get greedy, just $75,000. But we have to stay where we are now till we build our building. And they have to pay everything, the utilities, insurance, everything. And he agreed. So in 1 week's time, I sold him that property and I bought the other property and then we began to build. And then the first gift that I got was $300,000. For the building of the building. And then one of my board members came to me to tell me that he built buildings. And I said, no, you don't, you own buildings. He says, no, I build those buildings that I own and I will build your building and we won't have a contractor's fee. So that's how I got our new building.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So we have about 65 6,500 square feet. And that's in
the south
office. And okay. You've been there and you've seen it.
Yeah, it's
so that's, yeah.
It's came a long way from two chairs with phone.
Right. It has. And, you know, we continue to see women and they continue to have their problems and we continue to see lives change.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Tim has a thing he always says about positive thoughts lead to mm-hmm. other positive actions. Mm-hmm. I feel like you were doing positive things and just led. It's like a domino effect.
Yes, it has. But, you know, my faith brought me to do this, you know, because I truly believe that I had to live what I believed, you know, after hearing, you know, the pastor speak that Sunday. And so, but since then, you know, it's one thing to believe it, but a lot of times you take it back and you go, no, that can't be. You know, that, and then it goes, you know, so it's a give and take, and I've given and taken over the years, but I definitely have seen, you know, what I consider miracles, or I consider God's hand in it all, you know, because there's no way that some of the things that have happened, you know, were just a coincidence, or that it just happened because it happened. Yeah. I've seen too much of it.
Yeah, you make me happy. You just make me happy. You're definitely inspiring, for sure. I mean, everything that we're doing with the Positive Truth, there's a small team of us working on it.
Yes.
We're definitely trying to grow, and to see you've been doing Birth Choice for 45 years is just goals.
Yeah,
it's
and
as
it's
simple as that.
Yes, but it's just not me. It's, you know, all of these volunteers, you know, it's all these families that have stayed together, you know. I'm not the only one that's been there 45 years.
Absolutely.
You know, there's like five or six of us, and, you know, and some of our volunteers have died, and, you know, and we miss them, and, you know, and the same thing with some of my mothers and, you know, some of my children, and, you know, I have lost mothers to death, and, you know, it is hard, you know, but we're there for each other, and that's what counts.
Absolutely.
You know, that, you know, we live in this world, and, you know, humanity is, cruel to each other, and I just want to make sure that we see the other side of it. You know, we see the positive side, and, you know, I've just had too many mothers that, you know, have said to me, you know, my life was changed. My life was changed when I walked in. And I still have mothers that walk through the door and they ask, is that little short lady still here? I say, yeah, she's still here. And they go, you're the one that helped me, you know. And it's simple as just sitting down and taking your time and just listening to another human being.
Absolutely.
Listening goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, before we let you get out of here, mm-hmm. I like to ask every interviewer we have, what is your favorite quote? And I feel like you have an amazing quote because I like listen to you speak.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, all the quotes that you had, I was just like, yo, she can use that at the end. She can use that at the end. But I feel like I'm about to be in shock right now.
Mm-hmm. That you and I should be together in this world at the same time. How incredible God's plan.
Absolutely.
I think Tim liked that one.
I did. I'm just in shock. It's awesome hearing you speak. And I have been over there to mm-hmm. the South office to help volunteer with the girls' basketball team. And it was a good time. We had fun. And hearing everything about it, you've been doing this for 45 years. Definitely Superwoman, Wonder Woman, all of the above. I'm sure you can fly. Earlier, before, you know, while we weren't on air, you said you couldn't dunk. I'm pretty positive you can dunk. I have no doubt in my mind right now. I really want to thank you for coming on the Positive Truth.
My pleasure. Anytime. My passion is to share, you know, my stories about Birth Choice and to share Birth Choice and the work that it does and will hopefully continue to do.
Awesome. Well, you guys heard that here. Her passion is to share it. You guys need to share this. Like, subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, all that good stuff. Our social medias, again, are Facebook at The Positive Truth Podcast, Twitter at TPT_podcast, iTunes at The Positive Truth, and I believe that's it. Everywhere else is at The Positive Truth as well. JP, you got anything?
Amazing interview. I think you're a hero. We're out, I guess.
Stay positive.